Tonight is a very, very special night to me, and I think to just about every person in Alcoholics Anonymous, especially the women, because this is the 40th anniversary of the coming into Alcoholics Anonymous of Sybil, who, without her, it might have been a little tougher for a lot of the women. I grew up with two brothers, but if I ever had a sister, a big sister, this is the gal I would want, because she has taught me so much. These are the teachers in the front row that you see down here are the teachers that I had when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous 28 years ago. And so without further ado, I'm going to light a cake and we're going to sing and then we're going to get Sybil up here and get this show on the road. Sybil, come on up here, babe. Do with it as you wish. Just start talking. Tell us something about yourself, please.
All right, I'll do that. Oh, what an order. I don't think I can go through with that. It's just been too much already. That beautiful song and the music. Oh, thank you. God bless you. I just have goose pimples still from that marvelous song. But I must tell you my name. My name is Sybil Doris Adams Stratton Hart Maxwell Willis Corwin. And I'm an alcoholic. Bud said, before I call on my wonderful friends, regular participation meeting, the type that I was born into a long time ago, told me to tell you a little bit about myself, and I'm going to make it very brief, because it isn't possible. It just isn't possible, and I'll never be able to find words to tell you how overcome I am that so many of you came tonight. I am the most fortunate of women. There's so many of you heard my story that there's no need to tell you that I walked the streets of Huntington Park and Florence Avenue and Manchester and Firestone, drove when I was not too drunk and was in every bar in town, had my last drink at the Happy-Go-Lucky Cafe up here on Florence Avenue. I don't know whether it's there anymore. And I had been in the Dick Hatfield bars that they had in the 40s. Those were only three that I liked because they were noisy and there was always a lot of music and there were always a lot of fellows around there to buy me the drinks. My original investment would usually be the first drink or two, and if they didn't spring for a drink for me, I'd get in my car and drive very carefully down to the next one. And my greatest investment in booze was usually my glasses, because I always managed to stomp on them, lose them, break them, and the bartenders were protective, and they'd put them up on the cash register to save my glasses for me, because at a certain stage of my drunkenness, I would fight. I'd go home with black eyes. I wondered what I had said to create such a Donnybrook. I wouldn't know. I kicked in a drum in an orchestra once not too far from here and was 86th out of that place, and the cops would arrest me, but they wouldn't put me in jail. They'd take me home many times. Or sometimes they'd call my husband and have him come and get me. And all those times, beginning from day one when I was 15, I didn't want to drink. I wanted to quit because my parents were very strict. They were very stern and they were very religious people, church people. And I did this against my better judgment and did not know why. And I made those promises to Papa, to my brother Tex, who was 10 years older than I was. I was 21 before I found out that Tex was an alcoholic, too. At that time, he was 31. And he and I drank everywhere together. He was a very talented man, and he could make a lot of money and overnight and then lose it overnight and wind up back down on Skid Row. But whatever Tex did, I did. We drank together and we drank separately. After a while, he told me I was a drunk, and he wasn't like that. He said, Sib, you're going to die a drunk because you can't take it or leave it alone like me. And I had already bailed him out of jail 89 times. Now, all those marriages, I was searching and looking for a way out and didn't really know. I didn't know how to quit. I had no idea that I was an alcoholic because I'd never heard the word. But all I had ever wanted to be was a good wife and mother, and I never was. I had a darling little girl. I wanted to raise her properly, and I did everything that I could to do that. But I knew that she would come home from school someday and find me drunk. And so I searched, and I looked, and I'd get maudlin and have crying jags. Well, you know the rest of it. Finally, after a drunk ride, went up to San Francisco and then had to have a hitchhiker drive me home because I couldn't drive. And he turned out to be a wonderful guy. And he was broke, and he was heading for Los Angeles. I parked my car, and I wandered around town, and I wound up in a Turkish bath, sobbing and crying, and knowing that my husband would be gone with my little girl. He had said he would, and that I wouldn't see her again. And I read that magazine, the Saturday Evening Post article, dated March 1st, 1941, and it was written by Jack Alexander, and it told about AA. And I wrote a letter right then and asked for help. And the letter was returned almost at once. And told me there was a meeting in California that I need not come back to New York. And I had said in my letter I would, and I would have too. The letter said, you don't need to come to New York. You have a group in California. One group, and luckily it's in Los Angeles, your own hometown, and go down there and see them. Well, I did. There were about a dozen of them. Now, that it may not be entirely accurate. There might have been 9 or there might have been 14. What I'm trying to say is they'd never had a woman alcoholic, and they were sitting around a table at the Elks Temple. And they didn't know I was alive, I guess. They thought my husband was an alcoholic, and he'd never had a short beer in his life. And the leader got up and opened the meeting and said, this is a regular meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in California. We're a band of ex-drunks who've gathered together to obtain and maintain our sobriety on an all-time basis with no mental reservations whatsoever. And before this meeting starts, as is our custom, the women will have to leave. And I was the only woman, and I knew he was throwing me out in a polite way. And I dashed out of there, crying and sobbing, and my non-alcoholic husband got the full shot. They thought he was a new baby. And so I thought I'd been thrown out. I honestly did. And I went on a terrible drunk. And then I called Cliff Walker and demanded instant service. I said, send your AA ambulance and get me and take me to your AA hospital cure. And I really thought that's what it was. So you know that I didn't know much about AA then, and Cliff wouldn't do it. But he told me to go back the following Friday, that they had never had a woman alcoholic, and that he would call them and tell them that I would be there. And I was very angry, and I made threats of all kinds because he wouldn't pick me up. And he said, we don't go to bars and pick up drunks. And I couldn't understand that, and I couldn't understand why they wouldn't send the ambulance. And I wonder why I went. I believe it was because my brother Tex came over and read the AA pamphlet, and he didn't tell me he was hurting from alcoholism. He just said, I'm going with you. And I pleaded with him not to go. I said, don't louse it up, Tex. They'll throw us both out, and I'll lose my chance. But he went, and they had 512 step calls forwarded from New York because of the Saturday Evening Post article, and Frank Randall dealt them out to that little crowd. Tex went with me and took a bunch of winos from Skid Row with him. He thought it was a money-making gimmick, and he was going to find out where all that money was. But he was there for a sincere reason, but I didn't know that because he didn't tell me. Well, those 12-step calls had to be dealt with, and Frank Randall did it according to the area in which you live. They had a man there from Orange County, Mel Trickey, who took 50 or 60, and Kent Hayden had a huge stack, and he took them for Riverside County. And Santa Barbara, and a man there from Hanford, and he got a bunch. And so it went, and down to our local boys. And then Frank had this huge stack of letters left, and he said, I've saved them to the very last, because we now have a woman alcoholic, and her name is Sybil Maxwell. Come on up here, Sib, and get these 12-step calls, and make these calls on the women, because I'm putting you in charge of all the women. And I immediately saw a neon sign saying, Sybil's in charge, Sybil's in charge, Sybil's in charge. thought, I was thrown out last week, and now I'm in charge. And I thought, boy, you get promoted here in a hurry. Well, I wobbled up there and told him I couldn't do it. And Frank, big man that he was, looked down at me, shivering and shaking, and little moons, half moons of blood in the palms of my hand. And he said, I said, I can't do it. He said, why not? I said, because you said if these calls weren't made this week, somebody might die. And I can't take that responsibility. And the reason I can't do it is because I'll be drunk by next Friday. I said, I always have been. Unless there's a miracle that takes place in this hall with the people. And there were not many there. There were Tex and his drunks, and the crowd was about the same as it had been the previous week because these letters had to be answered before we got a crowd, you know. He says, well, I don't expect a miracle, but it can be done. And you wondered if something could happen to you here tonight at your first meeting that could ensure your sobriety for a week so you could come back with the new women. Yes, that can happen. But it isn't coming from my lips. I'm going to read it directly from the big book that we have here because we go by the big book. And he opened it up and he read, when all other measures fail, working with another alcoholic will save the day. That's what you'll be doing. That's what Bill did. He didn't even have Dr. Bob then. He got very discouraged. 75 of them got drunk and he said, I'm giving it up, Lois. This thing is a failure. And Lois said, it's not a failure, Bill. You've been sober 6 months. Bill says, well, by golly, Lois, you're right. And he went on over to Akron and met Dr. Bob shortly after that. And then you know the rest of it. You know the rest of it. And so he said, I want to tell you that this works. It worked for Bill, Dr. Bob, and the next guy that came in, and it'll work for you. You go see those women and you won't get drunk. Get your mind off yourself. And so Tex went with me. He just said he was going to ride around with me for laughs. Well, we did have a lot of laughs. But he never had another drink from that day forward until his death in 1952 in October. And we did have a lot of fun. But he was very serious about getting a group started in, so that we wouldn't have to go downtown every Friday night. We lived out here. And he knew that the beaches had to be covered. And Linwood, Compton, Inglewood, the southeast area, Downey, and so on. So we got a 12-step call through a newspaper. The city mother gave us the phone number of Walter Watt. So Tex called him up and said, come on over to the house. My sister and I'll talk to you. And we talked to Walter Watt, who lived on Walnut Street here in this area. And Tex said, I'm thinking of starting a group, but we'll have to find a place to meet. And Walter Watt said, well, we'll meet in my house. I'm an old widower, and it's a big house, and I'll go along with you, Tex, until you can rent a hall. So Tex got his babies together, and I went over there that night, and I made the coffee out in the kitchen, and there were 10 or 12 of them, and then I was out in the kitchen most of the time making the coffee, and all of a sudden Tex said, Seb, come in here and lead us in the Lord's Prayer like they do downtown. And I didn't know it. I was a shy, frightened person to go in there, and all these men standing up there, Texas winos and a few local boys here, I was petrified, and Tex looked at me and said, all you have to say is our father. So I did that for the first time. And we met in Walter Watt's home, and then he sent one of the boys out to look for a hall. And they had three locations, one on Independence and State Street. It was too big. We rattled around in there, like, just rattled around, just a few of us. Then we moved over up to the end of the streetcar line that we used to have. I don't know if that's Seville, I think it is. And that place burned down. So Tex told Eldon Butler to go look for a permanent hall. And Eldon Butler found this one. And here's where we met, right here on Sunday nights. And then after, several years, Tex was able to rent the basement for one night a week. And it was a closed alcoholic meeting. And no one down there was supposed to talk about anything up here on Sunday night about what they'd heard down there. And so a fellow would get up and start talking, and he'd forget, and he'd say, well, as I said last Thursday, down at the hole in the ground, meaning the basement. And so it caught on. It was renamed the hole in the ground. And then eventually meetings and meetings every night in the week. And we had all of the cooperation in the world from the city officials, because the Saturday Evening Post quit giving us too many 12-step calls, it would be bound to die down. All of that publicity helped tremendously, the biggest impetus that Alcoholics Anonymous had. But now we had no 12-step work. So Tex said, what shall we do? And he would call up a couple of guys and give them a phony address, and they'd go out there, and it'd be a big lot. It was 42-3 West 102nd instead of East 102nd. Try again. And they'd mill around out there until 10 o'clock at night, and he'd say, well, they've had a meeting. I guess I'll send them home now. And so we did everything that we could to get 12-step calls, but he found out the judges and the ministers would send us calls, and they kept us alive here over a long period of time with their cooperation, and we'll always be grateful for that. So the goose hung high, and I was happy. And not always, because you will think that in 40 years that I am wise, that I am stable, that I know a lot about everything and about this program, that I never lose my temper, that I've never had any tragedies, that I've never gone through bankruptcy, that I've never lost husbands and divorced them. You would think that everything was beautiful for Sybil for 40 years. But you know something? We're human beings, and we're going to have our share of problems from the time we come in, and then we're going to have these glorious times that are always around the corner when we go through a testing period. Because Bill wrote me a letter when Tex died. Now, I have a few of them up here, not many, that you may have after the meeting if you want them. The last part of it, he wrote me because I needed comforting. And it said, life is but a long day in school, Sib. Some of our lessons are hard and some of the lessons are easy. It's not so much what happens to us here, but it's what we do with the experience we have. It's the demonstration that counts. And then the last line, he said, I know you'll keep on learning and passing on what you've learned, and you may read this letter to the Huntington Park group if you think they would like to hear it. So I know you're going to keep on learning and passing on what you have learned, and what more does one person need to know about another? Affectionately yours, Bill. And that saved my life, because I could go on about my business and have another long span of happiness before I got another jolt. And when that jolt came, I knew AA had worked before, and I'd been through some rough times, and I thought, I've been through that, and that was a lesson. And there may be some up here, but I didn't drink then, and I won't drink now. And so I haven't. But don't be afraid of me because of the 40 years. I'm just like you. We're all alike. Do you think that I could have just stood out here on the corner and you stayed sober for 40 years without you tonight? I would surely die one day without Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the demonstration that counts, the demonstration that you've shown me here tonight by being here with me. I need you as much or more today than I did then. Oh, I do thank you for coming. And I'm going to start calling on people, and that's the end of me. Because I tell you, there isn't any way that I can call on all the people that are here. I'm going to start calling on people to come up, and I would like to do what Tex used to do and to stress the fact that it's a participation meeting and keep your talks down to 3 to 5 minutes so we can get as many as possible up here to say hello. And I know you can't keep, I mean, we're not just running that strict a schedule, but I see faces out there that I've got to hear talk because I haven't seen them in a long time. But I know this, that if I don't do it now, I'll never get a chance tonight to do it. I do want you to meet my husband, Bob, and I'm going to ask him to come up here and say a few words. Bob Corbett.
Hi, I'm Bob Corbin, an alcoholic. You know, she's been married so many times. Did you notice she fumbled for my name? And I look around to see who I want you to meet my husband, Bob. Well, if you ever are married to Sybil, and there's a good chance you may be someday, I'll tell you what you will learn. You will learn a great deal about a day at a time. When you're married to Sybil, you never take anything for granted. With that long list of husbands, if you don't shape up, out you go. So I'm just warning you, your day will come. It's just like being a guest speaker in AA. Everybody gets a chance at it. I'm sorry she talked about the 3 to 4 minutes because I wanted to give my 30-minute talk on what it's like to be married to a living legend. So I won't be able to do that tonight. However, I don't know. Now, in the old days, people here in the front row who used to get up and spring right up and give their 3 to 5 minute talks, they could do that. But Sybil, you're going to have a little trouble tonight getting them to talk 3 to 5 minutes because, hell, it's going to take Marino 3 minutes to hobble up here and blow all his time. I'm happy to be here. This is a thrilling moment for me, only I'm like a little child. I remember when I was a little kid and I went back to the neighborhood where I used to live, and everything was much smaller. then I remember it. And I remember this room as an enormous room. Don't you? I remember this. See, this was the biggest meeting we had in the world. Well, Tex didn't let us know there were any other meetings in the world. I met Sybil in 1952 here, and I thought she was a Sunday school teacher. I really did. I thought, oh, my God, look at that one up there. And she was leaving the meeting, and when she saw me, she said, are you new to AA? I said, no, I had come in 1949. I said, no, I'm from Norwalk. But she thought I was from the Nut House. So she's running around and introducing me to people like Alabama, you know, and all these other guys, Tommy Butler, and Valiant, all these guys who had been in funny farms. And I hadn't been in a funny farm. And so finally, now she knows that she was probably pretty right anyway, and I should have been. I'm delighted to be here. It is a thrill to be married to Sybil. She is my hero, and I married my hero, and I wish you as much luck as I've had on this program. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob. Now, the next one I'm going to call up here is especially dear to me. He was a hard nut to crack. For a while, we had a tape vine group down in Brea Canyon to send tapes to loners, Eskimos, up at the North Pole. And we did that because it's the only thing they had. That's all they had was our tapes. And so finally, we rented a hall down in Brea Canyon, and it grew and it grew and it grew. But we had tables set up. And there was a grim-looking guy sitting next to me with his own thermos. He wouldn't even drink coffee with us. And I would look over at him. He had a long beard, kind of longish hair, and he'd stare straight ahead. And I'd say, hey, isn't it a beautiful day? And he'd turn his face away. And I thought, I'm going to crack that nut. I'm going to make him talk to me. And we only had the meeting once a month, but I was persistent. I'm going to make him talk. I'm going to make him talk to me, but he wouldn't do it. But eventually he did, and that was 10 years and some months ago, and his name is Ungrateful Bud, and he doesn't wear a beard anymore. We're going to hear from him.
I am an ungrateful alcoholic. My name is Bud. And that's the truth. I wasn't going to talk to that old broad. She's the same age as my mother. And I don't think I'm the next one in line, however. They taught me in Alcoholics Anonymous to always add yet. She looks a lot better than some of them I ended up with. They were always older the next morning. I've only been alcoholic for 9 years, 11 months, and one day. And if I make it to April 21st, I'll be an alcoholic 10 years. Did we have any newcomers tonight? Can I see the hands? My God. Two. Okay. Three. All right. I'd like to welcome the three people that raised their hand and tell you that you're welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's been my experience since I became alcoholic 9 years, 11 months, and one day ago. That for every newcomer has the guts to do that, there are an equal number who do not. So I'd especially like to welcome the three that didn't raise your hands. And tell you that you're really welcome to this outfit because you're doing this thing right, so you'll be all right. And you're not going to believe some of these others that get up here anyway. 800 years sobriety. I don't believe this thing today. Anyway, I love this dear lady. She did find me almost 10 years ago. And there were guys that used to say to me, you know, she'd say it's a beautiful day. And this one guy down at Laguna used to always say, you know, how you doing? And I'd say, great. And then he'd look me right in the eye and he'd say, it's too bad your face hadn't heard about it. Well, anyway, I weighed 185 pounds at that time. And I did have a full beard, and I now weigh 150, and I was supposed to be dead by the age of 50 with heart disease. I didn't know about the alcoholism, and 1 month from now, next month on my 10th birthday, I'll be running the Boston Marathon, and I owe that to Alcoholics Anonymous and people like you and people like Sybil. Thanks.
That's my bud. Bless your heart. How much I do love you. And there's a girl that I love dearly, and isn't it a shame that AA grows and people move away, and we have no real statistics on people. We just don't know. We don't see the loved ones. They have to move other places, and we don't correspond, and I don't write letters. I will make a tape, or I'll reach for the phone. But I haven't seen her in 15 or 20 years, and she drove clear in from... Well, I'll let her tell you when. And, oh, I've been to thousands of meetings with her here at this hole in the ground. Her name is Belta.
My name is Belta, and I'm an alcoholic. And I promise Sybil I'll make the shortest talk of the evening, and this is it. Been through it all and survived. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous in 1950. And thank God that there were a few women like Sybil and Claire and Cuzzy and others too numerous to mention that were here. Because I needed alcoholics of my kind. And this is where I found them. In fact, I didn't know the word alcoholic. Because around Southgate, I was called that goddamn drunk. And when they called me an alcoholic, I thought I had risen, you see. So it felt real complimentary. I never will forget my first meeting, though. And I just wonder if Red Toothman's here, because he's the guy that's responsible for me staying at that meeting. Tex put on a show for me. I think Sybil will remember, because many things had been tried by many people to get me sober, but not by me, you see. They had a great desire for me to stay sober, but I didn't have any. And Tex could read an alky like nobody I ever saw. And he put on his, maybe his 223rd talk for me, about the doubting Thomas, because I had doubted that this would work. Well, I looked at him going through this, and I thought, Jesus Christ, I'm crazy, but man, this is too much. So, and besides that, I was sick. And I was laying up my head up against the side wall there. Ray Walters was lighting my cigarettes, and I was trying to smoke them. And I thought, I gotta get out of here. And Red Toothman read my mind, and he put his foot right up on the end chair. And I couldn't get over that bugger, and I had to stay. But I'm so glad I did. Because after the meeting, nobody said, why do you drink? How much do you drink? No questions asked. Literally, the people in that room loved me sober. They loved me sober. And I leaned on that gal there many, many times. And I treasured her friendship and still do, though we don't see each other. I've known where she's been. I haven't been able to be there, but I've known where she's been. And if I live to August 28th, through the grace of God, as Tex used to say, a long-handled spoon, I'll be sober 31 years. And God damn, I never thought that was possible. I have something that I carry with me, and it's from Bill's last message, and it's very meaningful to me. And he said, if I were asked which of our blessings I felt was most responsible for our growth as a fellowship and most vital to our continuity, I would say the concept of anonymity. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Velta. You see, I didn't know that Velta and Alabama were coming in. And they didn't know that a certain fellow would be here because, 30-odd years ago, my brother Tex called me and called Velta and a couple of the fellows from the hole in the ground and said, there's this little guy that won't stay sober, but he's going to get sober, and he needs our help, and I've got him corralled in a flea bag of a hotel up in Fresno, so go up and get him and bring him, drag him back. But we'd been doing that for years, and he hadn't sobered up, but we faithfully went because Tex said so, Velta and I and somebody else. And so we drove over the ridge route, and the motor burned out, and we thumbed a ride in a pickup truck, and cold, the guy gave us a blanket, and we would try to put it over our head, and we got dirt all over our faces. We got to Fresno about daylight, went to the flea bag, and found this little guy, drunker than a skunk, but so willing to come with us. But we didn't have a car, so we had to phone the hole in the ground and have Tex send the troops and send a car to get us all. And it seemed to take forever, and this guy wasn't sobering up very fast, but we eventually got in the car. Velta sat on one side of him, and I sat on the other side of him, and he would say, sing Danny Boy. And so we sang Danny Boy all the way from Fresno here. And he'll be sober 30 years in June. He's Texas' last baby. I want Ty Watson to stand up and take a bow. Like a brother to me. Love him so much. Love him so much. Now, sitting in the front row looking nonchalant and wiping his glasses off, figuring he won't get called on, is a fella coming up 40 years in about 8 or 10 days or something. But who was counting in those days? We didn't look at the calendar very much. About the first week in April, I would say. His name is Al Marino, and I think he can make it up here just fine. Come on up here, Al.
My name's Al Marino, and I'm an alcoholic. Jesus. That's better. Now, Sib and I came in about the same time. And, I guess we were both sober a year or so. And I said to Sib, when the hell did I come into AA? I know you know. And she said, yeah, you came in the same night as Tex. So you came in 2 weeks after I did. So I guess I've got 40 years coming up pretty soon, too. I never thought I'd live that long, you know? And Chuck, and next August, we'll both have another year, too. We're both the same age, Chuck C. and I. Yeah, he's my senior by 2 weeks. Say, I want to tell you a little story. It's about little Fidgy. See, I was a musician most of my life. A damn good musician when I was sober. You know, in the studios, they'd get mad if you'd fall on your face and screw up a take. Very intolerant people. It was a very intolerant. But this little Fidgy was a piano player, and he was loved by everybody. And I worked at RKO, background music, and I was there for many years. And there's a bar there called the Melrose Grotto. If you've ever been in Hollywood, you've heard of the Melrose Grotto. And the bar room itself had a long line of a great big long bar and just stools. And over here was a piano and a couple of tables, and that was about all. So about 4 o'clock every day, you'd find the real good drinking musicians right there with their belly up to that bar on one of these stools. Now, Fidgy was a little piano player who had been really at the top of the ladder, but he had gone down awful fast, lost his family, lost everything he had. And we were always like little Fidgy. He had been a very good, sober guy, but he became a bad alcoholic. There was an empty stool right next to me, and one of the guys poked me in the ribs, and he says, look, it's coming through the door, and here comes Fidgy. Fidgy was about 5'6". He was had a beard down to here. He had puked all over himself. His clothes were all torn. He'd been on a real, honest-to-God drunk. And he shuffled over to this One empty stool, and he pulled himself up on the stool, and he beat on the bar, and he says, "Bartender, give me a drink. John, give me a drink. You know I can play anything in the world. Just give me a drink." And he could. So finally, one of the musicians got a little tired of this, and he says, "There's a piano over there, Fidge. Let's hear you play anything." And Fidgey says, "I'll just show you." So he slid off the stool, and he went over towards the piano, and lo and behold, when he turned around, the seat of his pants were out, and his ass was hanging out. The piano... The bartender saw this, and he ran around to the end of the bar just as little Fidgey sat down. He says, "Do you know your ass is hanging out?" And Fidgey looked at him a minute, and he says, "No, but you just sing a few bars, and I'll follow you." Don't you like that, Celia? You didn't like it. See, there you go. Your wife doing like this a failure. I got a lot more of those stories, but this is much more serious. In the first year I was in AA, I was looking at some records, and there were between 400 and 500 people that were sober on Alcoholics Anonymous at that time. Isn't that something? Just 400 or 500 in the whole United States. And Sybil was the only girl that was sober at the time, at this time. Of course, when Sybil got working really good and we moved over to 2200 West 7th, it just seemed like we just had a flock of women coming in all at once. They fell out of from the trees. They come out from under the rocks. My God, it was just terrible. We had to keep beating them down. That they were going to take over all the time. In fact, a lot of groups I've talked at, they're nothing but women running the damn things. They have the lights low and the, you know, and the smelly air and the organ playing. Jesus, it's awful. And then they get up there and they read those damn poems, you know. The women are great. They always end up their talk with a poem. Well, anyway, Sib was the only AA at this time, and there was a guy who was a operator of big shovels. He was a big shovel operator, and I think he had about 3 months operation, 3 months sobriety. Everybody liked this guy very much, and he was doing very well. He got very happy about him, but he went downtown to make a payment on his brand new car, and he didn't come home. So his wife called up either Sybil or Tex or somebody, and Tex found him down in Skid Row. And he'd been in a fight or something. He had a great big gash across the top of his head. So Tex called us, and I think, Tex got a hold of him. And Pete Cunningham, who's passed away now, they're all passed away but four of us now, of that first bunch. And we got a hold of him, and we took him to a sanitarium over on Harvard, right off of Wilshire. Have him taken care of. He seemed to be very good. He could talk all right, and we just wanted him to take him in there like a little hospital, you know. We went to the meeting. It was on a Friday night down at 2200 West 7th. I was living in a $2 a week room above a grocery store at that time. And I got a call from this little hospital. And they says, "Our patient died." I says, "Oh, no." He says, "Yeah." I says, "What the hell we can do?" He says, "Well, you'll have to notify the family." So I called up Pete on the phone. And Pete says, "I'll be right over." And now this is between 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning. What'll we do? Well, what's the address? And we got the address of this guy's home. And on the way out to this address, it was way out on the south side, we had to pass Sybil Maxwell's house. So I says, "My God, let's call up Sib, because she can handle women." So we went to call up Sib. Sib got up, went on her clothes, and we got there. Sib was there ready to meet us, and we went out to this woman. They lived in a house behind, a regular house. We get ready to get out of the car, and Pete was older, but a very emotional guy, and he started crying. He couldn't even go in with us. So Sib and I went in. And Sib rapped at the door. And the woman came to the door and she says, "He's dead, isn't he? He's dead." And Sybil says, "Yes." "Where did he die?" "He died in the hospital." And then she just broke down. And here are these two little kids hanging on to her, crying with her. And of course, I'm a big baby too, the biggest baby in the world, and I couldn't hold myself. And by God, Sib's took care of this woman all that night. And we sat there with her and took care of the whole deal. And this is something about Sybil I will never forget, how brave a girl she was. Thank you very much.
I thank you, Al. Thank you very much. The guy's name was Daly, Ed Daly. Right, right. There's a woman here, I don't know, she's sitting somewhere in the back, and I don't know whether she would choose to come up here and talk, but I would love to have her. She has more years of sobriety, and I've forgotten when her next birthday's coming up, But of course, she will know. I've known her so long. She was so close to Rosa and Jim Burwell. And we all miss them so much. Mabel Moore is here. Could you come up, Mabel? Nice to be here for your anniversary, Sybil. I am Mabel. I am an alcoholic. And neither of those things are particularly important, but the fact that I'm a sober participating member of Alcoholics Anonymous and have been for 33 and a half years should mean something. It's not 40, but I'm working on it. I have a reason particularly for getting up tonight, because I was telling Al earlier, last Friday night, I talked at the La Habra meeting. Hadn't been there for a time. And everything went well, except that the boys had made a platform thing, because I'm short, and it's a tall podium. And, you know, they did that for Rosa lots of times, too. Well, you know, we hated. I always felt I was bigger than I am. And I didn't like the thing, and I got up and I told them that I was insecure. And I was. The thing, you know, kind of shook. But I was fine until I came to the end. And I had left a little piece of Kleenex on the podium, and at the last minute, yeah, I'm remembering that I must step down. The last minute I saw it, and I thought it looked messy, and I turned like this and picked it up and stepped out into space. And I landed flat on my rear end, and everybody was so kind, but I bet they have never seen a 73-year-old woman take such a pratfall in their life. And I thought I'd better go up those stairs and let you know that I'm really not afraid of taking a fall. I never fell when I was drunk, but I have taken a few since I've been sober. You know, as I say, I've known Sybil for a long time. And she and Rosa and I were kind of, well, we thought quite a bit alike. And I'll have to tell you why Rosa and I got awfully close. I was in a sanitarium in Chula Vista, and I'd been messing around with Alcoholics Anonymous for about 18 months. Physically dry a lot of the time, but I would get drunk and I'd be so disappointed. And so this time, Bill Copeland and his wife had taken me to the Chula Vista Sanitarium. And the next day, Rosa and a gal named Lydia came to call. And maybe you don't know this, but usually we send two people. One who says, "Oh, you poor little thing," and the other one who says, "Get off your ass," you know. So, because, you know, Rosa did that so well, she was the one. And she looked down at me in my bed of pain, and she said, "You know, if they tossed your can in the can a time or two, you know, maybe you'd get wise to yourself." And I thought, who the hell is this woman? I didn't say bitch in those days, so I just said, you know, this woman. I didn't know her, really. But at any rate, we became friends because they brought me my orange juice. And I said, "And I would like a pot of coffee for my friends." And the nurse looked at me as if I'd lost my mind and said, "We don't do that, you know." And I was going to get up and walk out. So Rosa thought I was just like her. Not just like her. You know, she was the Red Queen from Alice in Wonderland. And then she bestowed on me the title of White Queen. Now, if you know your Alice in Wonderland, you know damn well that the White Queen wasn't a damn bit better than the Red Queen. She didn't yell so loud when she set off with their head. That's the only difference. We were very good friends, and, you know, we used to get together a lot, and I remember the night that you and Lou came in to a party at my house late. I could have killed them. Everything was going well, you know. Everything was laid out. It was just lovely. And these two came in about 10 o'clock or something like that, and they hadn't had anything to eat. So Booker was out in the kitchen trying to broil frozen steaks for them. Remember, you were both on diets. I could have killed them. I wish they'd stayed home. For those of you who are new, and I agree, there are probably more than three of you who are sort of here for maybe the first, second, or third time. This is a remarkable program. We have a tendency to get kind of mystical and stuff like that, very spiritual, you know, flowers in one hand, so on and so forth. And I always remember when I think of that I was in a meeting once, and a friend of mine named Wynn was doing
doing a very spiritual talk, and there was a little man sitting next to her, and he kept dozing off, you know, onto my shoulder. And she had just gotten off one of the most beautiful spiritual things you've ever heard in your life. It was great. And he raised up his head, and he looked at her, and then he turned and looked at me, and he said, "Do you believe all that crap?" And down went his head. Well, this is not a mysterious program, you know? It really and truly isn't. So don't believe us if once in a while we stand up here and say we don't know how it works. Those of us who've been around any length of time at all know how it works. We have a book, thank God, which has a chapter, which is 5, and it's entitled How It Works. And I believe it. I believe everything in it. Because it has worked for me, a day at a time, all these years. The years have gone by so fast. All of those of you who are down there know. The years do. They fly by. I never expected to be 73 years old. I never expected to be 33 and a half years sober. But a day at a time, it's a wonderful way to go. And I wish you all the good things. Thank you so much, Mabel. Thank you for the little fan, too. I thought I might need it up here, but I don't. If I do, I'm going to use it. I've known a man a very, very long time, and I used to see him every Saturday night at the Hollywood Saturday Night Group. I think he lives out in the neck of the woods, and I've often meant to ask him, how did you get involved in a group clear in Hollywood? And I never have somehow or other had the time. But lately we've been chatting on the phone, and I'm going to have him tell me that one of these days, because he has been faithful to Alcoholics Anonymous for more years than I know about. And I want to hear from Billy Terrell.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Bill Terrell, and I'm an alcoholic. This is terrific. I didn't expect this. I don't deserve it. I'm not old enough. Sib wanted to know why I chose a group in Hollywood. It was for the simple reason, when I came on in 1949, I had to have a meeting on Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night. Those were my nights to drink, as well as other nights, the other 4 nights a week. But those particularly... And I chose the old Hollywood group on Friday night, and we had a group at the Garden Court Apartments on Hollywood Boulevard Saturday night, and then we had a motion picture group on Sunday night, and those were my meetings. And Friday night was all right, but Saturday night, the guy that was supposed to open the meeting and lead the meeting didn't show up, and I heard that he had been drinking a little, and this went on for several Saturdays. And I went down to see John Carroll and asked him what I could do about it. And he said, the old cliche, get you a book, a pound of coffee, and start the meeting. Well, we had the book in the meeting place, and I bought a pound or two of coffee and some day-old donuts, I think. And the people had been walking away. We'd had people coming up there previously when this fellow was running it. I've forgotten his name now. And they'd go away. Well, let's go somewhere else. I think there's another meeting at that time in Pasadena someplace, about the only one on Saturday night. So we started out. And that's the reason I go to meetings over there. I live in Linwood. I've lived in Linwood and Southgate for over 20 years. At that time, I was living in L.A. And that's it. And by these people who've been up here, and Velta, I think I remember you from an old group over in Linwood. I'm not sure. But I hadn't seen you in so many years. I want to see you after the meeting.
All right, Al.
You know, I always open my mouth and say the wrong thing. But it's terrific, and I want to thank all of you good people, every one of you, because it's terrific to think that all these years I've known all these people. And Seb used to go to meetings. First night I came up to this meeting, I knew it was in the basement, but I couldn't find the damn basement. So I came upstairs here. And there's a meeting going on, and there's coffee cups on this big, long table. I guess it's the board of directors of the club or something. And my buddy and I sat down, and we didn't hear any action, so we finally got up and finally went outside and finally found that little passageway down to the basement. And that was a long time ago, and I came over here quite frequently in those days. Charlie Fairman had a meeting down the street, and I went to it quite frequently. And Tex really used to lay the law down. And it's from these people, and those have been up here before me that have helped me so much. And God bless you all, and all of you keep coming back.
God bless you.
Oh, Billy, I was so hoping you would be here. You know, I feel sure that the majority of you here tonight do not know that part of my family is here. And I would like Tex's wife, Ann Adams, to stand up so you can see what she looks like. Stand up, Ann. And she has a son named Clyde. After my surviving brother who lives in Dallas, his name is Clyde also. And Clyde has been sober at the hole in the ground for years and years, and he will tell you about it. Come on up here, Clyde.
Hello, everybody. My name's Clyde, and I'm an alcoholic. Well, I was thinking today that it couldn't be better. And, you know, it started for me like a lot of the rest of you, you know, right here. I never expected to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I know that when I was growing up around here, I used to drive my dad to these meetings. And through the years of my drinking, I never really give it much thought. And, you know, I watched my mother sober up, and I thought that was a good deal, but I never even thought that she had gone to AA. And it became a part of my life. It's really hard to put in words, you know, listening to all these, old-timers get up here and talk about it, how much we owe to them. I know that Sybil tried to help me. I guess you might say she planted a seed. I'd just gotten out of jail, and she wanted to talk to me, so I went and talked to her, and I think it was embarrassing for me to be an alcoholic, you know, with my father being Tex Adams. It meant something to me, and I didn't want to admit to it. But the talk that we had at the central office helped. I know one night my wife wanted me to do something about my drinking, and I remember that talk we had. And I called AA, and I talked to the guy, and I says, my wife thinks I've got a drinking problem and she needs some help. And I put her in touch with Al-Anon, which, you know, Sybil had mentioned at that early meeting that when we talked. And my wife, it helped her. And I was curious. I was curious, you know. I've always been afraid of groups or, you know, to talk. And I'd ask her about these meetings, what happened, what was done, you know, and to get, I guess, an idea of what might happen when I got there. And they said, well, you get up and talk. And I said, never. And I eventually did get here. I tried to start my program in North Long Beach, and it was a small group called the Three or More Club, and it was really all the people I could stand, you know, when I first got to AA, and it suited me, and I was hanging in there one way or another, and a group from the Hole in the Ground went to that meeting and, you know, conducted one, and I liked what the people said, you know, and how they talked, and they seemed believable, and it seemed like something that I might obtain. And I after about 6 or 7 months, I walked to this meeting, and I wasn't sure if it was going to work. You know, I was sober a while, but not really comfortable with it. And after, you know, I got down here, and, you know, they do work the steps, and they are willing to talk to you and put up with you till you can, you know, and stand you, I guess, until you can stand yourself. They helped me an awful lot. I met Duke here, and he became my sponsor, and he means a lot to me, the talks we had, and it started to come together here, and I started to, you know, to grow a little bit, and like Sybil says, a lot of things happen after we get sober. In fact, I think a lot more real things have happened since I've been sober than when I was drinking, or maybe I just didn't notice while I was drinking, but I've maintained, you know, sobriety, and I've enjoyed it. It's been nothing but good for me, and I'm really glad to be here tonight and see Sybil enjoy 40 years of sobriety. It's really terrific. Thank you.
Thank you, Clyde. Thank you very much. I was simply amazed tonight. Oh, I've been amazed almost all night, I'll tell you a fact. But when Walter King and Eunice came in from Oxnard, which is up the road a piece, you know, I was just overwhelmed. So now it's time to hear from Walter. Come up here, Walter.
Hi, everybody. My name is Walter King. I'm a recovering alcoholic. And thanks. It's been wonderful to be here for Sybil and to see Texas' wife, because there's the guy that gave me a lot of help. I am the guy who almost put AA down the river in Los Angeles. I started on a drunk after helping get AA started here. And some of the eager beavers in AA, the upper crust, the upper echelon, felt that I wasn't doing my part for the program. Too many members were coming out to my apartment in Hollywood and getting drunk. And they decided to do something about it. And I woke up in a place out in Englewood called St. Ernst. It's still there. A Jewish fellow owned it by the name of Stearns, and he changed it to St. Ernst so he could get all us Catholics out there. So that was one of my escapades. The boys put me out there, and I figured I'm getting all the members down there at my apartment drunk, and we better get him out of there, or else he's going to ruin AA. And this is where I woke up. But I want to say I owe a lot of credit and thankfulness to one guy in AA who had the confidence and no one with it. Some of them weren't very polite. And telling me what was wrong with my drinking and what was wrong with me. And I turned right around and cussed him out and told him what a no good bum he was. Why didn't he try being honest and telling me how to live honest? But I never forgot his words. I came back to the program. They're still alive tonight as they were that night he spoke to me when he was in bed. And he said, Walt, you got to get honest with yourself or you'll never make this program. And I says, Tex, what do you mean honest? A con man like you telling me to get honest? He says, I don't mean that kind of honesty. He says, I mean within yourself to clean out that garbage and get on the beam. Well, it took me a long time to digest this. I used to go to the old mother group with a bottle in my pocket and take a few drinks and tell the speaker what a bum he was. And they'd say, get out, come back next week. They'd even be kind enough to drive me home so I wouldn't get any more drunk driving. But little, by the honestest, and all you people that are new who think you have an angle or you might be able to cut corners on this program, you only need one thing, and that's the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you follow it as it is written, not as some people would like to have you follow it, you won't have any problem. And the man upstairs, the God that you have to accept like I had to accept, will give you all the help you need. The years have been good for me. I've got 35. I've got the same wife that brought me to one of my first meetings out here when I was having trouble with the program. And I thank Sybil, and I thank her having the 40, and I thank you people that makes this possible. And for the many more who still don't know, I thank you.
Heart, Walter. Oh, it's so good to see you both. It's so good to see Steele Marino. I remember down at the mother group you used to sing like a bird when we'd have a special event. Steele had a marvelous voice. Al would play his trombone, and Al sings. He has a bass voice. And he used to sing. I don't know whether he still does. I used to have a record of that. Yeah. Now, I told you about this gal. I don't know whether I did or not. I was in charge of the women, right? Until about 40 of them came in, and one of them was a rebel, and all of the women had to be cleared through me. Now, Milton went to see Betty, and Betty got sober. That was the sponsor and the sponsee, and it all had to come out even because I had my book and I'd check them off. Most of them got drunk, but one didn't, and she was the fly in the ointment. Her name was Kay Riley, and she came in one night. Now, I was in charge of those women. We had no traditions, you know. I was governing. I didn't know any better. And that little job probably kept me sober. And but she wouldn't report to me. And one night she walked in, and she had six women with her. This was down at the mother group. And they hadn't been cleared through me. And I walked up to her and said, where'd you get them? Where'd you get them? The system. The system won't work unless you report to me. And she said, to hell with your system. And I had a nervous twitch when I came in, and I got it back that night when she defied me. Now, Kay Riley is a Pearl Harbor baby. She will be sober 40 years on December 7th this year. And she moved down to San Juan Capistrano after... She made more 12-step calls than I'll ever make if I live to be 100. I'm 73 now, and I've made a lot, but I never could make as many as Kay Riley. But she started a group in her home and then eventually moved to a hall. And a very successful group, and it's still going. They met on Watsika. She came from Culver City, that rebel dead. I wish she was here tonight. But instead, we have a gal here tonight who's secretary of that original Kay Riley Culver City group, and her name is Betty. Betty Suttle, come up here.
Everybody, I'm Betty, and I'm an alcoholic. And I just said to Sybil, she's a stinker. I didn't know this was going to happen. But I just can't tell you how thrilled I am to be a part of this. I don't think Sybil knows how much she's meant to me. I, unfortunately, live out in West Los Angeles, so I'm not close enough to be close to Sybil. But I have always identified with her. And she has been kind of an inspiration to me just from the first time I heard her. And if I know she's speaking, I'm going to be there. And if I can possibly get her at my meeting, she's going to be there because I love her dearly. And I can't tell you how much I feel to be here in her meeting and Tex's meeting. Of course, I didn't know Tex. I just had my 11th birthday, so I'm a baby. But I hope someday to be in that front row here with all these biggies if I live long enough. And I just thank you all, and Sybil, I love you, darling.
Well, I won't sleep a wink tonight, and I don't care. I just don't care. I've been thinking about this meeting for days and days and days, and I was telling two of my very dear, dear friends before the meeting how that I can really anticipate something and get on an AA high, which is my medicine that keeps me sober, I'm sure, the enthusiasm and all of that. But I was just, again, I there are no words to tell you how happy I was when I saw Chuck and Elsa walk in here tonight. I just smothered them with kisses. And so I'm going to ask Chuck to please come up here.
My name is Chuck Seard. I'm an alcoholic. I'm in my 36th year now without a drink. And I've known most of these people that have been up here tonight ever since I got here. And I love them to death. And every one of them have been very important to me in this new way of life. Tex called me not too long before he left us. And he says, Chuck, he says, I've been talking down here at the Holding Ground for so long that there ain't nobody come to listen to me. Now he says, I'm inaugurating a new deal. I'm starting to have a guest speaker one night a month. And I want you to lead off. So I told him I'd come. And I want to tell you how he introduced me. Tex wasn't well at the time. And so he got up there and he said, you know, it happens that there was a full house here. And Tex says, this is the first night in months that there's been enough people here for a man to talk to. And he says, you know, I made a hell of a mistake. He says, I asked a guest speaker to come and talk tonight, and he says, the son of a bitch came. And that was my introduction. And from then until he died, he called me his lead bull. I loved the old rascal just like the old did, and I loved his sister ever since I met her. And this group has a little gift that they want Sybil to have, and it's my great privilege to act for the gentleman here in the front row, Duke. Duke the Carson. I don't ever use anybody's last name, Duke. Except Duke Carson. And he didn't think he ought to try to get up here on this high platform tonight. So he elected me to give this little token to Sybil. And it's something that we're all acquainted with. Looks like it might be gold. I hope it is. It sure shines pretty. And it's something that we all like very much, and it's a 40-year AA deal. And we're going to give it to you.
One final thing, Sybil. With 40 years of sobriety, we have Julie with 81 days of sobriety who has something to present to you. Julie, where are you, please?
I'm so happy to be here. What examples. Thank you.
You know, he's been referred to, but our fearless leader and my sponsor. Duke, would you stand up and let those that don't know you see you, please? This youngster will be 89 years in just about a week or so. And he's been a father to us all and very dear to us. Peggy, would you get the gals started with the cans? You know, the seventh tradition has to hold forth. Duke would never let me lead another meeting if I didn't get this one. Bob, you follow to the back of the room to make sure nobody goes out the back door with it, you know. But this is Sybil. And as I said when I opened the meeting, that if I were ever granted an older sister, this is what Sybil is to me. The ABCs after the 12th step in the book. The C says that God could and would if he were sought, and Sybil's the one that taught me that. I can recall being in Sybil's living room about 27 years ago, 27 and a half years ago, and we were talking about God, and I says, God, there is no God. I says, this is it right now. When you're dead, that's the end. There is no more. And she said, if I believed that, I'd kill myself right now. And that kind of shook me up. And she's the one that taught me how to seek God. And I owe this woman a great deal. And I think that we all owe this woman a great deal. And thank you, Sybil. We love you.
Well, I am completely as happy as I'll ever be. And one of these gals that got up here, Betty, I believe, said she wanted to be up in this front row when she's 40. Betty, I'll be right here with you, honey. I intend to keep coming back. But someone spoke, now this little girl that came up here had, how many days did she have, Bud? 81 days? Something like that. And my dear friend Bud here has been so good to me throughout the years, and I know he always loves the newcomer, and he has done more 12-step work than anyone that I can recall. But I think it's fitting, since our new girl brought me the roses up here, for me to read to you what our... And then I'll quit. I won't say another word tonight. I want to thank Bud. I want to thank Duke. I want to thank all the hole-in-the-grounders and all of the visitors. And I mean, I love you so much. I love you so much. You are my strength. You've given me your strength. You've given me your hope. I don't feel like that I am unique or different from any one of you. And here, to be in keeping with what Marino said about a poem, Bob and I have a new baby. He isn't here. We wouldn't let him come tonight because I want to give you his impression of the steps. He's 87 days sober today. I'm going to read them while they're passing the basket. I admit that I've been powerless around the alcoholic stuff. My life's become unmanageable. The going's been kind of rough. There is a greater power than I myself can be. Believing in that power will restore my sanity. I've made a strong decision to turn my life and will to God as I understand him. My goals will I fulfill. I've made a moral inventory, the searching, fearless kind. I've found a strong new confidence. I no longer will be blind. My wrongs have I confessed in detail to the end. I admit each fault to God and self and to my faithful friend. Now I stand quite ready to have these ills removed, those defects in my character that through my life I've grooved. With God as I understand him, with humble and contrite heart, I ask my shortcomings to be removed. I've been given a new start. I'll make a list of persons I've harmed in days gone by. To each and all, I'll make amends. To right my wrongs, I'll try. I'll go to each directly and confess the wrongs I've done and make up for my errant ways without harm to anyone. My inventory will continue with each new passing day. With wrongs admitted promptly, the honest, forthright way. With God, as I understand him, doing good as I go about, seeking knowledge of his will and the power to carry it out. I've had a spiritual awakening. I've found true friends who care. I'll carry my message to others anytime, any place, anywhere. And with babies like that, and to maintain my own sobriety, I'm going to keep coming back. God bless you all.
You know, for many years, we had a guy down here named Charlie Paramond, and Charlie was going blind when he came into Alcoholics Anonymous. He was afraid he wouldn't understand everything there was to know about this program, so he memorized the book. And if you asked Charlie a question about any problem you were having with living, he would always refer you to the book. And he'd say, on page so and says, it says, and he would quote verbatim what it said. And then he would say, and this is what it means to me. And it would be pertinent to the problem you were talking about. And he was one of the greatest teachers that I've ever known in Alcoholics Anonymous. When Charlie died, I stole the closing to his pitch because it's good and I think it's important. Closed every pitch he ever gave with this little bit of wisdom that medical people say that Alcoholics Anonymous is the greatest medicine on the face of the earth. Religious people say that Alcoholics Anonymous is the greatest religion on the face of the earth. I say that Alcoholics Anonymous is the greatest thing on the face of the earth, and no drunk should be without it. If everyone will rise, Elsa, will you lead us in the Lord's Prayer, please?